The Sean Green Show. Sean covers all things entertainment. Movies, books, news, concerts, television, video games, the entertainment guru. Sean covers it all. This is the Sean Green Show podcast. The Sean Green Show podcast on WGN Plus and SeanGreenShow.com.
And welcome to the Sean Green Show. I'm Sean Green. I want to thank everybody out there that's listening. Hey, make sure you guys check me out on SeanGreenShow.com. And also check me out on WGN Plus. You can find all the latest interviews and news on WGN Plus. Man, you know what? It's been a really crazy weekend. Two mass shootings in less than 24 hours. One in El Paso, Texas, and the other one in Dayton, Ohio. And I'm here in Chicago, and it's been about 51 people shot here in Chicago. And one of the things that caught my attention after all this, President Trump today, when he addressed the nation, he brought up the fact of violent video games and internet is one of the root causes of mass shootings. And I want to actually try to figure out, you know, the truth to this, and how much of it's mental and the other part is just pure impulse. So I want to get somebody on this, Dr. Brian Russell. He's a psychologist, lawyer, and he's also the co-host of Fatal Vows on the ID channel. And he joins me right now on a Super Celebrity Hotline. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for doing the show. Well, so first of all, it's when it comes to video games and internet, how much do you think, you know, that type of activity plays into somebody actually going out and committing atrocities like this?
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's complex. I don't believe that video games take normal kids and turn them into killers. What I do think, though, is that when kids grow up in this country seeing thousands of deaths happen on television and on movie screens and even causing numerous very realistic-looking deaths in playing video games, there's a desensitization that happens where people become less shocked and horrified and angered by this stuff than they otherwise might have been. And I think that how it really plays into these events is less in terms of making shooters out of normal kids and more in terms of making complacent adults, relatively complacent adults, out of people who otherwise would have been more bound and determined to tamp down on this stuff and get it down to the absolute minimum frequency we possibly could many, many shootings ago. Everybody in the immediate aftermath of these things, you know, screams and yells about how somebody has to do something. And then a couple weeks go by and nobody does anything and it's kind of business as usual until the next one. And so I worry that death and mass death has become, and video games and television and movies are all sort of part of this mix, a fact of life for Americans, which they shouldn't be.
Yeah, they really shouldn't. And one of the things that keeps getting tossed around too was is mental illness, and you know, as far as mental health care, and if people had more access to you know, mental health care, this would kind of stave off mass shootings. And have you seen any proof of that actually being true? Because I always thought that, you know, when things like this happen, it's more impulsive. Like people just like it comes out of nowhere and it just happens.
Well, I am here to tell you as a psychologist that I wish I could come on this show and tell everybody this stuff is the product of mental illness, and the better we get at diagnosing and treating mental illness, the fewer and fewer of these things are going to occur. But that just simply isn't true. I am lucky to be one of the better-known psychologists in the country, and I would not be nearly so narcissistic as to tell you that I could have sat down with either of those two shooters prior to what they did this past weekend and talk them out of it, or even get one of my psychiatrist friends to medicate them out of it. The fact is, mental illness, and people who are mentally ill usually are not dangerous, and mental illness does not account for this. Mental illness does not produce wanton, sadistic evil. And that's really what this is. I wouldn't totally agree that it's impulsive, because I think that these things are planned, usually in the minds of the perpetrators, and oftentimes actively planned and practiced. There's a lot of, I call the three P's, planning, preparation, and practice goes into these things to make them as lethal as possible. Another thing that a lot of people may not realize is that when you look at a lot of the perpetrators, they had access to mental health care. James Holmes in Aurora, Colorado, the movie theater shooter, right. He had plenty of access to mental health care. Cho Sung Lee at Virginia Tech, plenty of access to mental health care. Nicholas Cruz at Parkland, plenty of access to mental health care. And so it just goes to show you that that really is not the solution. And part of the problem with the mental health care system, I don't know if it's a problem, but one of the realities is that in this country, you got the constitutional right not to be locked up unless you are a clear and present danger to others or yourself. And so it's very difficult for somebody who has not been charged with or convicted of a crime to be held for very long. Because if somebody comes in the mental health system and they say they're homicidal or suicidal, believe me, after they spend a few hours in some mental health place, they're not saying that usually anymore. Right. They're saying, oh, I didn't mean it. I'm not going to do anything. And it's very difficult for a mental health professional to hold somebody more than about 72 hours max. And so, you know, the way we have to come at this is through the criminal justice system. When people do lower level violence, which these people almost always do on their way up to, almost nobody goes from 0 to 60 with this stuff. They pass through 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, doing progressively more violent things and getting away with it or getting slapped on the wrist for it. And then ultimately they end up, now they might not always end up getting charged. What you hear sometimes people say, he didn't really have any record to speak of. Doesn't mean he didn't do anything.
Right.
It means
right. He
didn't get prosecuted and convicted of stuff. Like Adam Lanza up in Sandy Hook had committed all kinds of crimes against his mother, who did not want to press charges. Well, look what a wonderful favor she did for her own son and a bunch of other people's sons. Zero. And she's dead now, too. She would have been much smarter to have insisted on prosecution of him, because then he would have been in the hands of the justice system that actually could hold him. If and when they thought maybe he's safe to not be held, they could have put all kinds of conditions upon his release. He's got to not have any guns in his house. He's got to go to therapy. He's got to take his medication. He's got to do a whole nine yards of things, or he's right back in the lockup. It's the justice system that has the power to do that. But that means when they show us who they are with less than lethal but still alarming behavior, we got to jump on that. Nicholas Cruz, for example, mm-hmm. instead of jumping on it when he did things like picking fights with kids in the school, threatening people, what did we do? We did everything possible to mainstream him, keep him in the mainstream classroom as long as possible. That was insane. When Cho Sung Lee set a fire on the campus of Virginia Tech, what did we do? We diverted him, didn't prosecute him, didn't lock him up in the jail, let him say that he was going to voluntarily get mental health treatment, which he didn't get, and look what happened. We never are served well by kid-gloving people who show us that they have no intention of living peacefully among us.
Yeah, and I mean, there was a case here, actually last week, a guy, I don't want to say his name, but there was a guy that got caught with two semi-automatic weapons with armor-piercing rounds, and he was let out on $10,000 bond, which means, you know, 10,000, right, which means, you know, 10% of 10,000 is 1,000. So he was out on a $1,000 bond and ankle monitoring. And my,
yeah, we're the insane ones in right. that case. And if I could, let me say one other thing about it, because I'm sure some people were listening to me say that mental illness doesn't account for this. And they're thinking, hey, Dr. Russell, there's no way these are sane, healthy individuals doing this. That's true in the clinical sense. Certainly these people have all kinds of things wrong with them, clinically speaking. But legally speaking, and you're talking to a psychologist and a lawyer here, legally speaking, when we talk about somebody being insane such that they are not responsible for their criminal actions, we mean somebody who's so crazy they cannot differentiate right from wrong. Not just that they don't. If that were the standard, then every terrorist would be not guilty by reason of insanity, because they would just go, I thought what I was doing was right. I thought I was following my religion. Okay, no, it's, did you have the ability, if you chose to think about it, to identify that what you were doing was wrong, not by your standards, but by society's standards, that it was against the law, and you did it anyway. And that is absolutely the case with every single one of these people. Clinically, all kinds of problems. Legally, these people are sane, wow. Which is why whenever, you know, and the president does this sometimes even, and we all do it, I've done it, but as soon as you start talking about one of these people, the first word out of most people's mouths is, oh, it's a sicko, another sicko. And I really try not to do that, because that isn't it. This is not, what you're seeing is not sickness. What you're seeing is evil.
Oh, wow.
Intentional acts to inflict as much pain as possible on other people, committed by cowards. Every single one of these people, virtually every one, is a coward. They don't try to do this stuff at the Army base. They don't try to do this stuff at the police station. They pick the softest possible target. You know, the guy out in Gilroy, the Gilroy Garlic Festival in California a week or so ago, you know, he gets a rifle and he dresses up like a soldier and he goes around like a tough guy and picks a gunfight with an unarmed six-year-old. You know, these are cowards who want to make others suffer but not suffer themselves. And almost always, as soon as counterforce shows up on the scene, as soon as they perceive lead flying at them or about to be flying at them, what do they almost always do? They almost always put a quick, painless bullet right through their own head, or they flee until they can't flee anymore, and then they commit suicide. Sometimes they commit suicide by cop, or in some fewer cases, they actually just immediately surrender, like the guy did in El Paso.
Right.
You know, they do not want to suffer. They want to make others suffer. They're cowards. And so, you know, actually, when people say, well, you know, I think the thing that is going to make this all better is if we have more gun restrictions. We've got to go after the instrumentality that they use. And unfortunately, that's just not going to work. With 300 plus million guns in circulation in this country, plus millions more automobiles, cars, trucks, pressure cooker, all kinds of things you can use to commit mass murder, you are never going to solve this by going at the instrumentality of it. You're going to solve it by going after the individual as best you can, like we talked about. The ones that we can interdict, we can identify and get them off the street. We need to do a much better job of that. And then the second thing we need to do is obvious targets like schools and churches. We got to harden those. It is absolutely inexcusable that we still have K-12 schools in this country that have not been Israeli-style secured, where somebody still in 2019 could walk through the door of those places with a rifle in hand and start shooting and have minutes to go at the kids with the gun before any counterforce showed up on the scene. That is unconscionable. that's still the case. And so we got to harden up those obvious targets, the schools and the churches. But then the third thing is, mm-hmm. we really actually want those people to expect more counterforce and not to know where it is. You know, the guy who went in and shot up the garlic festival in California, he did that knowing that very likely he would be the only armed person on the scene, at least for several minutes. And the cops did a wonderful job. They got there in a couple of minutes, but he still had a chance to kill a bunch of people. Right. So, you know, what you actually want is you want these shooters to think, I'm not going to have any time at all to inflict suffering on people, because there's probably going to be a law-abiding adult ready to shoot back at me within feet of me just about any place I can think of to go do this.
Right.
That actually would do more than the no gun sign, which these guys just see as a sitting ducks here sign.
Right. It's kind of like the air marshal. Like everybody knows that there may be an air marshal on your flight. So the possibility of you actually doing something crazy is minimal. You know,
right, and the more air marshals we hired and put out there, the more reason somebody had to believe that there was one on his or her, some would-be terrorist had reason to believe there's probably one on this flight, the less likely they are to try something. And how you can know is just look at Chicago.
Yeah.
Look at California. Strictest gun laws in the country. Look what happened last weekend at the Garlic Festival. Look what happens every weekend in Chicago. Then contrast that. I'm from Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
Contrast that to here, where any law-abiding, sane adult can carry concealed. You know, I mean, it's a smaller population, but if you control for that and just look per capita, not as much of this here. University of Kansas students, law-abiding, sane students who are of age, can carry concealed. That was probably the best thing that school could ever have done to ensure that there's not going to be one of these on that campus. Because somebody who's looking to inflict a bunch of suffering without suffering themselves, they're not going to pick that campus. You know, how they're going to see it is, well, gee, I might get to do, you know, one or two murders, and then I'm going to be taken out. I'm not going there. I'm going to go to the place that says, you know, gun-free campus.
Wow. And Dr. Brian Russell, thanks so much for joining us. This has been one of the most eye-opening interviews I've done. We can also find you at drbrianrussell.com. Also, you can check him out on the ID channel, the Investigation Discovery channel, co-host of Fatal Vows. Also, check him out on Twitter and Facebook. It's at Dr. Brian Russell. Thanks so much for joining me.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Cool. We'll be back right after this.
Thanks for listening to The Sean Green Show, the entertainment guru. You could friend him on Facebook, Sean Green Show Media, or follow him on Twitter, at Sean Green Show. The Sean Green Show on WGN Plus and SeanGreenShow.com.